Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Listeners, start warming up your fingers to call in about the Democratic presidential debate last night. But we've got one of our guests having a little MBTA problem, which I know many of you can identify with. So we're going to do that part last. And we are really happy instead to invite a guest into the studio who can help us talk about a really important question, which is seafood. How do we prepare it in the summer?
What is the best way of cooking a lobster? Sometimes people say they like to cook them on the grill, and that's perfectly fine. What I have found, and really just by experimenting, in the restaurants we steam our lobsters. We think that gives us the best flavor.
That is Roger Berkowitz. He's the president and CEO of Legal Seafoods, and he joins us now in the studio. Roger, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Tiziana. Pleasure to be here.
So I don't know if you—we cut off the end of that clip. I don't know if you remember. How do you suggest people try cooking their lobsters at home?
Well, cooking your lobsters at home is actually interesting because I was just playing around once, and I realized that the shell, whether it's on shrimp or whether it's on lobster, and actually in clams as well— does really well in a microwave.
What? That is sacrilege. What?
You know what? And I've tried it as an experiment. Again, it's at home. We could never do this in the restaurants. But if you took a steamed lobster, a boiled lobster, and a microwave lobster, didn't tell people, and put them out there, first of all, the coloration would be much better on a microwave. The coloring would be better, and there's more sweetness because the shell acts as a cover or a pot and retains the flavor.
All right, so I actually have to ask this. How long do you cook a lobster in the microwave? How do we know how to do this if someone wants to try this?
It's roughly, every microwave is a little bit different in terms of power, but I'd say about 6.5-7 minutes per pound.
Per pound.
And make sure it's on a rotation.
All right. I'm one of those spinny wheels in
yes,
the microwave.
I
had to ask because I know there's some listener out there this weekend thinking, I am going to steam myself a lobster in the microwave. All right, let's get a little more serious. I know that Legal Seafood's grown as a brand, but it was a company that started right across the river in Cambridge.
Yes.
So what's your take on where the food scene is in Boston now versus when you started?
Ooh, well, you know, it certainly has changed. You know, demographics have changed. You know, certainly it was the aging boomers and a few seniors. Now it's, more aging boomers and now more millennials coming in. And the how they like to eat and what they like to eat differs in terms of recipes and style of restaurant has been changing. So you see those changes over time. And it used to be for an aging boomer or a senior, they wanted the more formal white tablecloth. That's really on its way out right now. What you see is more casual. The people still want quality, and they still want consistency, and they still want value. But how they get it in their time frame has radically changed.
Have you had to change your menu, and how do you think about doing that in order to adjust to these tastes?
So, you know, it's funny. So one of the things I've done over the years is I always get my wait staff and bar staff and kitchen staff together. I do it without management because I just want to get their perspective because oftentimes nobody really asks them what they like, what they're seeing, what the guests like. And I get tremendous feedback from them. So I use that intel, if you will, to sort of change the menu. So over time, we have really increased the appetizers. We've changed to more of a tasting kind of menu. And it's not unusual today to see people ordering two or three appetizers as opposed to an entree.
So smaller bites, lots of different flavors,
yes, lots of different flavors.
All right, so we spoke with this year's James Beard Award winner for the Northeast, who is Tony Messina, on the show last month. He's the chef and a partner at Uni. And he said that Boston food scene is often described as kind of meat and potatoes and went on to say this.
What we have in Boston is kind of like these segregated areas where they have their own food and there's no melting pot. And I think that if we can somehow merge that back to where it was, we would probably have a more nationally recognized community of restaurateurs and operators.
What's your reaction? Do you think he's right?
It's interesting. I'm not sure. we like what we like. I mean, you know, it's kind of interesting. The scene is different. I spoke to a guy yesterday who was the CEO of a major shoe company. And he has roots in Boston and roots in San Francisco. And it was very interesting because he said, you know, in Boston, I have my favorites that I go to, and I'm happy there. When I'm in San Francisco, and he's lived there for 7 years, he says, I can't think of one restaurant. This guy was kind of a foodie. I can't think of one restaurant that my wife and I go to with any consistency. So you might get some diversity in other cities, but you get more of a comfort consistency, I think, in Boston.
All right, so it is summer in New England, which for me and I think many kind of nothing says summer like fresh out-of-the-sea lobster. Mm-hmm. Legal has grown now to more than 30 locations. I was actually really surprised by that number. I didn't know it was that many. Yeah. How do you make sure that you really keep things fresh when you're expanding like that?
So it's interesting. We're kind of an anomaly, to say that. What it is, we're really in the fish business. We're known for our restaurants, but our core started from a retail fish market. And over the course of the years, we've been really become fanatical about quality and the handling of seafood because you really have to be careful in terms of, are you buying the top of the catch? What is the cold chain between the boat and the restaurants receiving it? So we have a plant in South Boston that's completely temperature controlled. We have a laboratory there. We test our shellfish, and we test every swordfish and tuna fish for mercury content. So it's imparting that consistency that allows us to do what we do. If we were a seafood restaurant without the background in fish, it'd be extremely hard to do.
So with this seafood background, it raises a question, mm-hmm. because a huge question facing the industry itself, mm-hmm. seafood, is how to handle the challenges of climate change. Mm-hmm. A new analysis from the independent research nonprofit Climate Central found that the waters off the coast of New England have warmed more than any other coastal area of the U.S., and that's up 3 degrees since 1901.
Yep.
The
mm-hmm.
same report found that fresh and salt waters across the country are warming 40% mm-hmm. faster than expected. So that's a lot of change.
Huge challenge.
Yeah. So how are you thinking about environmental issues like climate change and sustainability?
So first of all, you have to acknowledge it's there. One of the things that another hat I wear is I'm on the Marine Fisheries Advisory Committee. So I work directly with NOAA and the scientists there and the Department of Commerce to show what is the right balance here. Clearly, waters are warming up. And I, if you ask me, I thought there were 4 to 6 degrees because what's happened, the traditional species of fish, the haddock, the cod, the flounder, the gray sole, are going into deeper waters. Now, some people would say, oh, it was overfishing. I think, yes, we did some overfishing in the 80s. But as of the last 10 or 15 years, the water temperatures have changed. Those fish are going into colder waters.
So I just want to be clear. So, you're saying it's not overfishing anymore. It's climate change.
It's climate change. There's absolutely no question in my mind because you have areas, for instance, Canada, which is now experiencing sort of a renaissance, if you will, in some of the catches coming in there, sort of greatly increasing. Same thing with Iceland. Iceland has done always reasonably well, but the waters are really cold. So we claim that actually some of our fish are going into those waters there. So you have that dynamic going on. So what is the answer to this? I really think the answer to this is going to be aquaculture. And we have to get into it in a much more sophisticated way than we have. Other countries, you look at Scotland, you look at Norway, you look at the Faroe Islands, you look at New Zealand, have all done a spectacular job and are far more advanced than we are. We have really got on the stick. Department of Commerce right now is saying that is the answer. In fact, they're actually encouraging people to take a look at doing fish farming in federal waters as opposed to coastal waters.
So fish farming is what you mean by agriculture?
Yes.
All right. And
yes.
Are you
or
invested
fish ranching.
In, are you investing in that at Legal?
So I am. I'm certainly looking at it. I'm certainly trying to partner up with great aquaculturists who are doing the right thing. So I want to make sure we're not in the business of ranching or farming fish, but I am in the business of identifying where the best fish comes from. So the onus is on me to find out who has best practices and partner with them in that sense.
And getting engaged in climate change, addressing this issue, is it because it makes smart business, or do you see this as a social responsibility?
Oh, I think both. I think it's social responsibility. And I also look at fish that may be in a little self-serving way, in that it's the healthiest of all proteins. And so if you any kind of doctor, whether it's an ophthalmologist, whether it's a cardiologist, whether an orthopedic, they're all talking about the benefits of the omega-3 and the fish oils and the benefits of eating fish. So I think as a healthful protein for the population, it's something that we should be focused on. But I certainly believe in aquaculture. And also aquaculture will take the pressure off the wild stock
and allow it to replenish.
Yes. It may not be replenishing as fast due to the water temperatures, but it will replenish.
All right. So Legal Seafood owner Roger Berkowitz, the Me Too movement has shaken up all industries. We've seen it everywhere, but that includes the food industry. Mario Batali was a high-profile example, but it's more than just big names. A 2014 survey by Restaurant Opportunities Centers United found that among restaurant workers, 66% of women had experienced harassment from management, and nearly 80% said they faced sexual misconduct from coworkers. How are you thinking about Me Too in the kitchen?
Okay, so who was that group again?
That is the Restaurant Opportunities Centers United.
Okay, sounds like a union, but okay, I'll back
off. Duly noted.
Okay.
So how are you thinking
right.
about it?
So, but I, you know what? I think it's every industry, and whether it's financial services. So the thing about the restaurant business, why those numbers may be higher, is that it is so labor intensive. So the number of people that you need to operate proportion to others is sort of higher. Okay, I think it exists in every business, and certainly something that we have to be mindful of in our business, regardless of what business you're in. And we take it, look, we take it very seriously. You know, HR departments are beefed up. We do training. You know, it's you have to walk the talk, and we're intolerant.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone comes up with a claim, whatever, it is investigated right away. And if we anything close to cause, they're gone.
So we spoke with Elle Simone, who's a chef and founder of She Chef, a networking group for women of color in the food industry. She was on the show last month, and she talked about exactly the Me Too movement and how it's changing the food industry. Let's hear from her for a sec.
I think that certainly women are feeling more courageous in expressing our disdain for, you know, the atmosphere and the work culture, and also being active participants in changing it. The more you have women in leadership, the more you have people empowered to make, you know, better decisions as it relates to their team.
So how important is it to have women in positions of power in the industry, and is that something you've done at Legal?
I think it's absolutely crucial. I couldn't agree with that woman more so. Our chief operating officer, Anne-Marie Escobar, makes that a priority. Courtney Cochran, our CFO, makes that a priority. Our head of marketing, Ida Faber, makes that a priority. So, yes, I am all in on it. I think, actually, diversity in and of itself is something that makes a business stronger. But having people in place that are more sensitive to it, I think, is crucial.
All right, Roger Berkowitz, while we've got you, let's see if we can inspire some folks as we head into the weekend. What is your favorite summertime seafood dish?
Oh, gosh. Summertime seafood dish. So I actually really like poached salmon. It's actually traditional the 4th of July. But I love cold poached salmon with a little bit of soy sauce on top. And if you want to add, you know, a little bit of dill to it, not bad as well, on top of a salad.
On top of a salad. Okay, yes. Wait, what kind of salad? Are we doing
greens? Well, you know what? It's a time of the year where the heirloom tomatoes reign. And so a little pesto on the heirlooms, a little bit of mozzarella, you know, is not bad either.
All right, whoever out there is cooking that this weekend, I am showing up at your house. All right. That is Roger Berkowitz, president and CEO of Legal Seafoods. Roger, thanks so much for coming to Radio Boston.
My pleasure, anytime.
All right. Stay with us. Coming up, we break down the second round of the Democratic presidential primary debate, including your calls. What did you think about what we heard from the candidates last night? Call us 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.